This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Mike Calton served 6 years in the State House representing Berry County and part of Ionia County. He hopes to represent that area again and add Calhoun County, this time in the State Senate. Calton is one of two Republicans running for his party's nomination in the 19th State Senate district, which is currently represented by Mike Knopfs. Mike Calton, thank you for being here.
Oh, it's great to be here.
So why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself and what you would like to do if you're elected to the State Senate?
A little bit about me. I am the chiropractor in Nashville, Michigan. I have been for 27 years. And that's where I got started in politics there, in Nashville, Michigan. It's such a small town that you have to wear many hats. And so there was a couple of open seats I couldn't fill on the village council. And so I just kind of walked into that. And over the course of 25 years, that kind of expanded. I eventually was on the school board, eventually the county commission, which one day a young man came in my office and he said he wanted to run for state rep, and that was Brian Calley, who's now running for governor. And he eventually gave me the idea to run for state rep once he was done, which I did, and it was an honor to serve the 6 years I did in the House. A little bit more about me. I'm an Army veteran and very patriotic, and want to say thank you to all the veterans that are out there right now. And I really want to get back to Lansing. Lots of improvements were made in the 6 years that I was there. We had terrible unemployment. Our state's budget was horrible. And we did a lot of work to bring the state's economy back, to bring a lot of the jobs we lost back. There's still work to be done. Work on roads. Car insurance is too high. There's work that we can do to lower car insurance in Lansing, believe it or not.
Well, let's start with roads. What would you want to do to make them more drivable? We went through a pretty rough spring, especially after, the roads froze up and then thawed, and people were driving over some pretty awful roads. What would you do to make them better?
Something I'm seeing, I'm going to a lot of township, village meetings, city meetings, and I am hearing about bridges that no longer can hold school buses, and school buses have to drive all the way around. Roads that have just been closed off. Roads that they're considering turning back to gravel. And in an economy that we're having right now, and this is happening, that's not progress, especially in an economy we have now. What's frustrating is in 2015, the legislature passed a fix to road funding, and people aren't seeing it yet. And I have to admit, I'm not seeing it yet. To be fair, that funding won't be complete to where it was supposed to be until 2021. But I think this is a great opportunity to look at our road funding mechanism and how PA 51, which is Public Act 51, which designates where road money goes, to look at that and to consider serious changes.
Well, what sort of changes would you make? Because we actually had a segment on that with someone from the Citizens Research Council who pointed out that there's a lack of prioritization, which comes with Public Act 51. In other words, it doesn't look at, where the roads might be in worse condition than in other parts. Is that something you would want to look at?
Well, definitely want to look at that. But, there is certain percentages that go to state, county, villages, cities. What I find interesting is that townships aren't included in the formula, yet townships are expected to chip in some cases, like Calhoun County, as much as 70% for road fixes, even though they don't have any designated funding from PA 51. I would like to see perhaps some changes in the way, once the money gets there, it's divided up. But even before the money gets to that formula where it's divided up between counties, cities, villages, and the state, there's certain money that gets taken out before that. And that needs to be looked at to see where our priorities are and to put more money where we need to put it, which is into the roads.
Do we need to find additional revenue? Does the state need additional revenue for roads, or can the existing money be enough to make roads better?
Well, the revenue is going to be increasing till 2021. So there's additional revenue right there. I don't think we need to look at revenue even beyond that. I think once that new money comes in, and it won't all be there till 2021, then I think we'll be fine. We just have to look at prioritizing it and spending it well.
2021's a few years off. Is there anything that can be done in the meantime to make roads better? Because people are feeling this right now.
I know that the legislature has the power to put more money towards it, and they did put some money towards it this year, but I think it needs to be more.
There's a group of business and education leaders in Michigan who have kind of joined alliances. They say that they want to advocate for fixing public schools in the state. There's, you know, some research which has shown that students in Michigan are behind other states in terms of achievement, especially reading and math. What would you propose to make public schools better if you do get elected to the state senate?
I think I'm really a strong advocate for public schools. And although I do like choice, you know, where people can choose to homeschool, to private school, to online schools, charter schools. Yeah, choices are good. But the way the funding mechanism was set up, it was kind of at the expense of public school funding. I was the president of a school board, and I worked a lot with our budget. And schools do well with slowly rising budgets that keep up with inflation. But when you have situations where the way choice was set up, where it takes the money away from the public schools and they start having dropping revenue in their budgets, that's disastrous to your school budget to just even run your school system, let alone to keep up with infrastructure.
So how do you allow for choice, but not do it in such a way that the public school, which sees a small percentage perhaps of their students opt to go to a charter school, that they are still able to be kept whole?
Something I heard that I thought was significant, that even though a student may choose to go to a charter school, the school system still has to retain the capacity to accept that student when they want to come back. And even though they're getting no funding for it, they still have to be prepared for that student to come back, to have that ability to serve that student. I really think that the buckets need to be separated, that the public schools have their funding, which slowly rises with inflation, so that they can have, you know, stable curriculum to keep up with infrastructure. And for the choice, which I strongly believe in choice, we need choices, there should be a separated second bucket of money that serves them.
Does that mean that overall spending on education needs to be increased if you're going to make those buckets separate and make them substantial enough to educate students well in both venues?
I think we put a lot of money towards school funding. And if you look at, you know, the combined budgets that go to schools, that is a priority for the state. I just think they need to be separated. I don't think they necessarily need to be more. But there needs to be, I think, designated money for public schools that slowly rises with inflation. And then you can have other monies for the choice.
Speaking of schools, do you think that people should be allowed to openly carry or carry a concealed weapon in schools?
In my opinion, that's a tough question, especially with the things that have happened. I have to say that I do support Second Amendment rights, and I think part of the problem is not necessarily the open carry in the schools. It's that when you have a school tragedy, that there's no one to fight back. And if it's a weapons-free zone and someone comes in there and they're a shooter, it's just like a hot knife through butter. There isn't anyone to stop them. So I do think we need to look at the policies for people carrying guns in schools, and I don't think you should just ban them.
Should teachers be armed? I mean, that's one idea that's been floated. The MEA says they don't like it, but do you think the teachers should be armed or should they have that option?
I think they should have that option. I mean, obviously, if a teacher doesn't even like to handle weapons, they shouldn't be made to have a weapon. But if you do have a teacher that would like to be armed in the school where it's kept safely away from students and there weren't any accidents, I think that option should be there.
What sort of training would you require to ensure that somebody isn't, you know, perhaps getting a gun for the first time because they've, you know, maybe been frightened by something they saw in another school? What sort of training would you require them to go through?
Probably something similar to what you see with the concealed weapons licenses. That type of training, I think, would be adequate.
Do you think that Enbridge's Line 5, which runs through the Straits of Mackinac, should be shut down?
I don't think it should be shut down. They need what that pipeline is doing. It supplies energy to the Upper Peninsula. It definitely needs to be carefully inspected and maintained, because you saw what happened when the pipeline burst, moreover by Battle Creek Marshall. It was a disaster. So that potential is there. These pipelines are getting older, and it needs to be carefully inspected and maintained.
So what do they do when they find a problem during one of these inspections? Because if you say, you need the oil and gas going through it, how do you then say, well, we found this in an inspection, and therefore we're going to do what?
I am not an expert of pipeline maintenance. I am not sure what the procedure is. I couldn't even begin to answer that.
But if there's a problem, then do you say that you have to shut it down until you fix it?
Depends on the problem. I mean, if there's just some, you know, corrosion on the outside, some maintenance is needed. But if there's something really serious and there's oil leaking, well, that may require shutting it down until that's repaired.
But long term, you think that the pipeline needs to remain active and needs to be there to supply energy?
I think it does need to be there.
Do you favor work requirements for people who are receiving Medicaid?
I think if they're able-bodied, I think they should. I just read this morning that I think a federal judge struck that down in another state.
In Kentucky, yes.
Yes. I think it's good for people to work. And not for us, but for them. I think it helps build pride in oneself and accomplishment and achievement at what they've done. If someone's able-bodied, I don't think it's beneficial for them, you know, to just sit at home. I think that they should have that opportunity to work.
Do you think there should be other exceptions for people who may be caring for someone who is not able-bodied, for instance?
Well, that's work.
Well, it's a bit of, okay. So you would count that as work if it's a family member, for instance, you know,
yeah,
or something
like that. Yeah, that's a type of work. I mean, housework is a type of work. You have to look at the circumstances. But I did know a gentleman, and he was in a situation where he told me he was depressed because all he did basically was sit at home and play computer games and watch TV and such. And I said, well, why don't you go to work? I mean, you built a balcony for me. And he says, well, if I did that, it's only really $50 more a week, and I'm not going to work for $50 a week. But in my opinion, he was depressed because he wasn't doing what he was good at.
I recall you speaking out in favor of expanding Medicaid when that was debated in the legislature, and you said because you knew a fair number of people who would benefit from that in your state house district. Do you think that those people, is the gentleman you're mentioning there, is he representative of the district, or would there be a lot of people who might find it difficult for, you know, family reasons, et cetera, to fulfill a work requirement if they had to?
I have to look at each individual case.
And does that get, you know, problematic from an expense standpoint that you have to, you know, go and visit someone, make sure that they really are legitimately someone who should get an exemption?
Well, look at the expense of continuing to spend money on this person when they could be working. So I think I think it's worth investigating it.
You mentioned auto insurance at the beginning. What would you want to do to try to reduce auto insurance rates in Michigan?
Well, the legislature created the Michigan Catastrophic Care Association, which sets the, and I'm going to call it the MCCA, so I don't have to keep saying Michigan, yeah.
Michigan Catastrophic
Care
Claims, isn't it? Isn't it the Michigan Catastrophic Claims Association?
Yes, you're right.
Okay.
And the way they determine the assessment you pay a year, which this year is going to be $192 per vehicle per year, up from last year, which I think it was $170 last year, well, there's over $20 billion in that fund, and they have like $1.5 billion a year in medical liabilities. There's a lot of money in there, and I think it's very sustainable at a much lower assessment. But the way the assessment's set up, it's a closed meeting and of industry insiders that determines that fee. I think the legislature, and they have in the past, should get involved and lower it to something more reasonable where the fund isn't just expanding. I remember when I first started looking at this issue about 7 years ago, there was $12 billion in the fund, and it's expanded to $20 billion, yet they're raising the assessment, you know, $22 per vehicle this year. I just don't see that.
Do you think there needs to be more transparency, more openness with the Catastrophic Claims Fund, or some sort of independent audit?
No, yes. I had put in a bill. It didn't go anywhere, but I had put in a bill to, you know, get a public member on that board to open up those meetings, as, and other people put in bills to show how are you calculating this. But in comparison, the state has about $1 billion in their savings with about $57 billion of expenditures a year. Now switch this over to over $20 billion in savings with about $1.5 billion expenditures a year. I think it's got plenty of money in it, and I think people who own cars deserve to get a cut in that amount.
Do you think the state can afford to continue offering lifetime benefits to someone who is seriously injured in an auto accident, or is that something you would be open to revisiting as well?
The fund has the kind of money in it. That's the kind of insurance that we paid for. So when I say it has $1.5 billion, say, in expenses a year, that's covering that. It's covering the medical needs you have for the rest of your life after an accident. And I think that's important. So we can cut that $192 a year per vehicle assessment. If you've got two vehicles, three vehicles, multiply that by $192, but still have that valuable coverage that you need. Something, you know, that I think the original proposals I saw on this would just have $20,000 or $50,000 of medical insurance if you got in a car accident. Well, that disappears fast. And what happens after that? Well, they say you go on to Medicaid. Well, I don't know if you've ever dealt with going on to Medicaid, but you have to spend down your savings, your family's legacy. You have to spend it down to $2,000 before you can go on to Medicaid. And so this not only protects your health, because you're not going to get the care on Medicaid that you get with the Catastrophic Claims Association, you not only get the medical care, but it's going to protect your family's legacy. I would never want to see what I've saved for my children and grandchildren to get eaten up in medical costs.
Many people, and I would say many of them in your party, the Republican Party, will make the argument that Michigan is the only state that has this system, and we should be looking at what other states do. Do you think that Michigan is on to something here, that Michigan's been doing it right and the other 49 states should maybe be looking at what Michigan is doing?
I do think that. And right now, we could just, my proposal, I would like to propose, I think it should go down from $192 a year to just $50 per vehicle. I think that will maintain the fund and give you all this valuable coverage.
Citizens Research Council of Michigan issued a report last year on what it says could be some tough decisions ahead for the state. They say there's going to be some pressures on the budget caused by promised tax credits, as well as the money which is promised for roads in coming years. Can the state fund all of its obligations and not raise taxes during the time that you would be a state senator if you were elected?
I would not want to see taxes go up. And this is one of the problems I have with bills that, you know, they pass and they celebrate, but yet they're relying on future legislatures to fund them. And that's why I was somewhat skeptical of the way they're funding roads here. It's almost, you know, kind of like, oh, we passed this, we finally did this, but we're going to let future legislatures figure out how to pay for it. Right now, the economy is going up, and I think the money will be there if the economy keeps going up. But I have concerns about, you know, when the economy goes down, and it will one day go down.
And do you think the state is prepared for a downturn in the economy? And we're at a point, you know, in the economic cycle where we've been in growth now for 8 years. That's long. That's normally beyond where we get before we have some sort of downturn. Are you concerned about whether the state is ready for that?
I'm concerned about it. Because even with 8 years of growth, how come our roads haven't caught up to that? The roads, you know, don't seem much better. Schools. Seems like, look at the infrastructure issues we have with schools and stuff like that. In 8 years, we haven't seriously addressed those. And that's in an expanding economy. Now I'm wondering what's going to happen if it goes down, and that concerns me.
Let me ask you about the ballot proposals that we at least at this point think people will be casting votes on. Recreational marijuana, the state legislature got this one and decided not to pass it, so it goes on the ballot in November. Do you think that Michigan should legalize recreational marijuana?
I did work on medical marijuana, and I do believe that medical marijuana helps certain classes of patients. When I worked on that bill, there were certain benchmarks. A, we wanted to keep the criminal element out. B, we wanted to have testing of the marijuana for patient safety. And then C, locals, we wanted them to have the choice if it was right for them or not. Like what might be right in Ann Arbor, you know, they want to have 10, 12 dispensaries, may not be right for Zeeland.
Or Nashville.
Or even Nashville, where they may not want to see any kind of business like that at all. So we wrote into that bill where municipalities can choose whether they have one or not. And then if they did choose one, they can have the opportunity to share some tax revenue. And so those were the benchmarks that were all satisfied in that. The legislature voted for it. The governor signed it. And I think that was a good piece of legislation. My concern about the legalization petition, I don't think it meets those benchmarks. So I will not be voting for it.
A proposal to change redistricting in Michigan?
I'm against that.
How come?
I think we have a process that's in our Constitution, and you have, you know, certain political interests that have put this on the ballot.
There is a vacancy on the United States Supreme Court as we speak. Of course, the Michigan Senate doesn't get to weigh in on who the judge is. That's the United States Senate. But it's led to some speculation about Roe versus Wade. And if it were overturned, that would mean that the decision on abortion goes back to the states. If you're in the state Senate and that comes up, would you vote to make abortion illegal? And are there exceptions that you would want included?
I do believe the abortion issue is a state's rights issue in the first place. A lot of issues should be taken up by the state, and I think there's, federal overbearing on this. And in Michigan, if this happens, they overturn Roe versus Wade and they leave it up to state's rights. I am pro-life, and I'm against abortion except to save the life of the mother.
That would be the one exception you would make.
Yes.
Life of the mother. Michigan has, under Governor Snyder, he has tried to make Michigan a place that he says he wants it to be welcoming to immigrants. At the same time, of course, President Trump has run on a campaign of border security and building the wall. Can you do both of those things? Can you be welcoming to immigrants and at the same time say that you want to increase deportations, you want to build a wall along the Mexican border?
Well, I think there's good immigration and bad immigration. My grandparents were immigrants, and I suppose everyone immigrated to this country at some point in time in their family history. And my grandparents had to wait in Canada until my grandfather and his brothers were somehow they set up jobs for them in Texas as ranch hands, which is interesting. And eventually, when they had enough money, they could bring their family in. And so we need immigrants, people with certain skills, doctors, they may be IT people, and have different skills, and I think we can be selective and bring in immigrants that don't immediately go on to the welfare rolls. I think problem immigration is when you get uncontrolled immigration that comes in, they may or may not have, you know, usable skills, and then go immediately on to assistance. I don't think that's beneficial, that kind of immigration. So I really believe that, you know, we need tight border security, and, you know, I'm not a believer in illegal immigration. I mean, my grandparents, you know, paid their dues to become citizens of this country, and they're very proud of it. And now their children and grandchildren like me had better lives because of that, but they came in the right way. And that's how I want to see people coming into the country.
So should there be, and as we're probably getting into more national issues at this point, but when you say we should be cracking down on illegal immigration, should we be shutting off some of the ways that people come in legally, or should we be looking to maybe expand some of those so that people can come in a legal manner to the United States?
Oh, definitely. We need immigrants. We need their skills. But it needs to be legal. And I think, you know, we need to expand legal immigration. I'm not a real big believer in giving citizenship to people who did not respect our laws and came here illegally. You know, if you don't respect that, then where does the disrespect stop?
How much should Republicans align themselves with President Trump as they head into, especially the general election in November?
Well, as far as Republicans, he is our president, just as Obama was our president. And now, and for the most part, Republicans do support President Trump. I do talk to some Republicans that don't support President Trump. Fewer and fewer, you know, you had the Never Trumpers who were Republicans that, you know, I originally liked Marco Rubio, Kasich, but there were so many people running, not everyone can get their guy. And Trump eventually made it, and I think that you have to get behind the person that won your primary system to be a good Republican. But I do talk to some good Republicans. They've been Republicans their whole life that don't like President Trump, but I think the vast majority do.
Are there issues where you would want voters to know that you and the president don't see the issue the same way? Or do you pretty much check the same boxes that he does if you go down the line on issues in particular?
You know, what's interesting is, you know, I'm knocking a lot of doors, and I'll be knocking doors a little later today. And it doesn't take long before someone says, what do you think of President Trump? And when they ask that, they either really like President Trump or they really don't like President Trump. And you just got to say how you feel and see how it goes. Definitely.
So what do you say when someone says, what do you think of President Trump?
I really like some of his policies. We need tighter immigration policies. I think, have been taken advantage of with trade. We need to put the American workers first and America first. And, you know, I believe in these principles. Now, if someone wants to get into all his personal life or his, you know, style, I should say, you know, that some people, that's why they put him in there. They wanted to throw a hand grenade into the system. And, you know, I see now a current hot word is disruptor. He's a disruptor. And some people like that, and some people don't.
Mike Calton is seeking the Republican nomination for state Senate in the 19th District. That includes Barry, Calhoun, and Ionia counties. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.